and welcome to Single Take with Daniel Barnes. I'm the titular Daniel Barnes, and for the last time, stop calling me titular. It's vulgar, offensive, and at most, half true. I got a couple of new releases that I'm going to talk about over the next 15 to 20 minutes. I won't keep you too long. I know you've got things to do. I've got things to do. I'm supposed to be on stage at the Marriott Marquis Ballroom hosting the Daytime Emmys right now, like right this second. So we're all making sacrifices. What do I have for you this week on Single Take? I will offer my single take, no more, no less, final offer, on the Japanese box office sensation Kokuho, directed by Lee Sung-il and opening today in the Sacramento area. I also have Young Mothers, the latest film from the highly decorated Belgian masters Luc and Pierre Dardenne, the Dardenne brothers. It premieres next week on digital and VOD services. But first, let's talk about Kokuho. IMDb synopsis of Kokuho. In post-war Japan's economic boom, gangster family-born Kikuo Tachibana finds himself adopted by a kabuki actor. Despite life's challenges, he develops into a gifted performer. Kokuho, as I said, it was directed by Lee Sung-il. The film stars Ryo Yoshizawa and Ryusei Yokohama, but the actor you would know best is Ken Watanabe, who plays the flawed patriarch figure here in the film. Kokuho, it's based on the 2018 novel of the same name by Shuichi Yoshida. It had its world premiere at Cannes last May and was released theatrically in Japan on June 6th. At the Japanese box office, it is the highest grossing live-action Japanese film ever. Ever. It is the highest grossing live-action film. The top five or six spots, they're all animated films, but this is the top highest grossing live-action Japanese film ever. It grossed, wait for this, nearly 20 billion yuan. Not dollars, but still, that's about 130 million, still pretty good. And it beat a box office record that stood for over 20 years, a film called Bayside Shakedown 2, which kind of sounds like something Tracy Jordan would have starred in. The Yoshida novel is over 800 pages long. The original cut of the film was 4.5 hours. It was trimmed down to about 174 minutes. And you can certainly feel the running time. How do you know? It's 3 hours long. But it's an enveloping and just masterful film. Kokuho, it means national treasure. It's an official title bestowed in Japan on artists who work in a classic cultural medium like kabuki theater. And that's the world of this film, kabuki. And we really see it from the inside out. Not just the process of creating kabuki theater, but also the personal costs that it takes on the people who are keeping this ancient art form alive in the modern world. It's a story of a rivalry, and there are certainly echoes of Black Swan, All About Eve, and other sort of backstage, behind the camera type of films. It's a universal sort of story in its arc, but there's a real cultural specificity to the traditions of kabuki, especially to the role of onagata, which are these female roles, heavily made up in the white makeup and the wigs and everything, but they're always played by men. That's how it's always been, and that's how it still is. So you have these fierce, passionate rivalries, but it's all in the surface of creating this feminine grace and beauty. But it's never laughed at. It's never like, oh, it's boys in makeup or anything like that. It's taken quite seriously. And it's really kind of just taken for granted that this is their passion, that this is their world, and they're trying to rise to the top. And in this world, the makeup, the costumes, the voices, the movements, everything just has this extreme significance. So it's just, it's so precise, it's so demanding. And again, it's all just in the creation of these, you know, young men trying to create this, you know, perfect vision of like feminine beauty. Film opens in Nagasaki in 1964 as Kikuo, not Kukuho, Kikuo Tachibana, performs for famed kabuki actor Hanae Hanjuro II. This is Ken Watanabe. And it's at Kikuo's Yakuza father's New Year's party. But the night goes horribly wrong. I mean, we don't wait for, like, big Yakuza kabuki performances to, like, get to, like, big set pieces. There's this amazing, like, sequence where the rival gang storms in to the New Year party and upsets it. And Kikuo's father is murdered. And Hanjuro takes him under his wing, partners him with his son Shunsuke, mainly as sort of like a training partner, someone to raise his own son's game, because in this world of kabuki, bloodline means everything. And the two form this very complex relationship, equal parts surrogate brothers, equal parts bitter rivals, and that will kind of drive the film and drive both of them kind of to these greater heights and depths over the ensuing decades. This is an epic story. As I said, it's 3 hours long. It's epic. I mean, it truly, truly is. Beyond the relatively standard setup about like a young ingenue trying to steal the place of a frenemy, we've seen that before, but there's also this family drama. As I said, kabuki, it's a family business. Lines of succession are very important, just like in royalty. So at a key point in this film, Hanjuro passes over his son Shunsuke and gives the signature role to Kikuo, his friend and rival. It's not just dysfunction. It's not just disappointment. It goes to this like Shakespearean kind of Greek tragedy level of betrayal. It's like King Lear in kabuki makeup. It destabilizes the universe. Like everything is off of its trajectory now. Everything is altered forever. Like The President's Cake, which I reviewed last week on Single Take, Kokuho was released in New York and I think LA in late 2025 to qualify for awards consideration, mainly for Best International Feature Film, which neither of them made the final list of five. But Kokuho was nominated for Best Makeup and Hairstyling, and believe you me, it deserves it. And why did you even stop there? Could have easily been nominated for costume design, art direction, cinematography, original score. This is a ravishing film. As I said, sumptuous. You live in this movie. You want to live in this movie. It is just one dazzling shot, one dazzling set piece after another. Me and Darcy, just last weekend, we watched Dr. Zhivago. We watched all 3.5 hours or so of Dr. Zhivago. And in that film, as in Kikuho, the personal aspects of the film, they didn't always connect for me. Some of the cultural stuff felt a little muddled, didn't always kind of make sense to me. But the stunning visuals and just this overall aura of passion and obsession and just, again, one absolutely stunning shot, scene, set piece, performance, costume, whatever, after another. It just, it's non-stop. It is on that sumptuous David Lean epic sort of a level. However, while Zhivago is anything but authentic, there's an Egyptian man playing the Zhivago, and all the other Russians have British accents, but authenticity is the word of the day here for Kokuho. The lead actors, Ryo Yoshizawa and Ryusei Yokohama, they spent a year and a half studying for this film, training under kabuki actor Nakamura Gondro IV, and then filmed for 3 months. And those details, I mean, it's there. They are so, it's so lived in. And all the details of the costumes, the wigs, the makeup, the stage design, the performances, the movements, the choreography, and it's all just shot and designed so, so beautifully by Lee Sung-il. And I didn't know anything about kabuki or this world of kabuki, and you probably don't know that much about it either. The film does give you enough in terms of like an on-screen explanation to connect with the material and its significance without over-explaining. But if you, I mean, what does that matter? I don't care about motorcycles, but I love seeing Steve McQueen jump the fence in The Great Escape. So why not let this film be your great escape from, you know, whatever, like your cultural, you know, your whole deal, man. Other people could probably, I don't know. I think you'd be hard-pressed to find any holes. I'm not the one to speak to the authenticity of it, but it sure seems as though the people who know are loving it. And obviously it struck a chord with the Japanese audience, not only at the box office, but apparently audiences at kabuki shows in Japan that saw a big bump of like 20-30%, something like that. So it's resonating with people on screen and even beyond the screen. Debits? Yeah. I think in the second half of the film, it goes a little too much on the backstage melodrama. I don't want to spoil it. I'll just say it doesn't feel as sort of finely detailed or as personal as the first half, which has this kind of, you know, wonder and discovery. It really becomes about the personal toll that it takes to become a kukuho, to become the best at something. Kukuho, he loses his family, his friends, his career, reputation, possibly even his sanity along the way. As the man said, you got to pay the cost to be the boss. So is it worth all of these sacrifices, all the people you've hurt to create something transcendent, even something like kabuki where it doesn't really have that much of an audience anymore? What takes precedence? The people you've hurt as a person, the people you've inspired as a performer? Like I said, it loses its way sometimes. It gets a little familiar, I think, in the second half. It just has that feel of like your classic behind the scenes, behind the camera, backstage sort of melodrama, turning point, even like The Prestige. I mentioned All About Eve and Black Swan and all these other sorts of films. The latter part gets a little familiar, and yet I feel like whenever it loses its way, as with Zhivago, I go back to Zhivago, the sumptuous visuals, those stunning details, the heart on its sleeve sentiment, and the epic scope and sweep of the story always carry you back and always just carry you right through the film. See this on the biggest screen that you can possibly find. And if you have to see it at home, consider buying a new TV. I don't know. They probably got some good deals out there. Check it. So that's Kukuho, and now let's talk about Young Mothers.
Pourquoi tu m'as abandonnée?
À quoi ça peut te servir de savoir ça?
J'en ai besoin.
Je les ai dit que j'allais placer Lily en famille d'accueil. Qu'est-ce que cette colasse de psy t'a encore fait?
IMDb synopsis for Young Mothers. Five young mothers living in a shelter strive for a better future for themselves and kids amidst challenging upbringings. Young Mothers, or Jeune Mère, nailed it, directed by the great Dardenne brothers, Luc and Jean-Pierre Dardenne, Belgian filmmakers. They've been making movies for a long time now. They're both in their 70s. And I've actually written pretty extensively about the Dardenne brothers back when Dear Daniel was just a blog. I have reviews up there of The Sun and Rosetta and Le Promesse, Unknown Girl. I've written about 2 days, one night. So I'm pretty well-versed in their filmography. It does seem like maybe they've been losing their edge over the course of their last few films. Certainly, it's not an event anytime the Dardenne brothers release a movie anymore, as evidenced by the fact that this is, for the most part, premiering on VOD. Probably peaked maybe 10 years ago, but I still have great hope anytime a new Dardenne Brothers film comes out. Like Kokuho, Young Mothers premiered last May at Cannes. It did win the Best Screenplay Award. Boy, they love the Dardenne Brothers at Cannes. One of the few filmmakers to ever win two Palme d'Ors. Also took Best Film from the Belgian Film Critics Association, which, like, how many times have they must have won that? It was Belgium's selection for Best International Film Oscar. Again, did not make the final five. They've never actually been nominated for a film, the Dardenne brothers, although Marion Cotillard did get a Best Actress nod for 2 days, one night. Other films of theirs you might have heard of, The Child and Lorna's Silence. Their latest film, Young Mothers, centers around four or five. They say five, but really one of them's gone pretty quickly. So really four mothers, teenage mothers, or mothers-to-be who are living at a shelter in Liège, Belgium. That's Luc and Jean-Pierre's hometown. In what might be a first for the Dardennes, this is a true ensemble piece. There's no lead here. All these young women living at the shelters, like I said, they're very young. They all come from poor backgrounds, and they all kind of have variations on, you know, the same basic problem, which is obviously their kids who are parents, but they're also dealing with their own fraught situations with their parents. They're the teen parents of teen parents, basically. There's one girl who is considering giving up her baby to foster care, but she's still keenly feeling that hurt from her own mother's abandonment and her life growing up in foster care. And as the Dardenne brothers hop around these crisscrossing stories, it often feels like every victory for these girls is just a jump cut away from crushing defeat. But the reverse is true as well, and it seems like everyone is sort of finding a reason for hope by the end of the film. Aesthetically, morally, and spiritually, Young Mothers, it's in line with previous Dardenne Brothers efforts: handheld camera, natural lighting, mostly non-professional actors, diegetic sounds only. And it has that observational nature that speaks to their documentary background. The old spark, it's not quite there. That crackling tension from, like, Kid with a Bike and The Child and 2 Days, 1 Night, it feels a little softer, it feels a little smaller, but even with these slightly lower stakes, the empathy for these characters, their situations, the refusal to sentimentalize or manipulate, and the simultaneous simplicity and complexity of the scenarios, it still carries you through. The Dardenne brothers, they still have it in that respect. It's a minor effort, for sure. Their last few films, I think, have been minor efforts. But minor Dardenne is still, like, fairly major. And it's this movie is still filled with those heartbreaking moments. That heartbreaking but not forced, which I think is a Dardenne brothers especially. I don't think I'm ever going to forget that scene with Perla, a young mother who has just been dumped by her boyfriend, and the nurses are telling her, "Your baby is crying," and she says, "I'm crying. Your baby is hungry. I'm hungry." You know, this is, you really see, like, what they're up against just from, like, a existential, emotional sort of point of view, to say nothing of poverty, the social demands, and everything else. And there's many other such moments. So while Young Mothers doesn't have the same impact as previous Dardenne Brothers films, I definitely think it's worth your time to rent on VOD, especially if you're a fan. And so far, it is my number one film of 2026. That's out of, like, 6 movies. But still, Clubhouse leader. All right, so let's wrap it up and let's get on our way. We've all got places to be, right? That is an enthusiastic go out there and go see it if you have the chance for Kokuho. As I said, it is a 174-minute film about kabuki theater rivalries. Maybe that doesn't sound like it's your thing, but it's a pretty fabulous film, I think. It's been playing in the Bay Area for the last couple of weeks. It was originally on the Tower Theater calendar, I thought, but it's actually opening today, Friday, February 20th, in the Sacramento area at the Century Greenback in Citrus Heights. It's also playing at the Varsity Theater in Davis and the Regal Edwards in Fairfield. It does look like the Fairfield Theater is your best bet if you want, like I said, the largest screen possible, just looking at the theater map. Young Mothers. It is available to rent or buy on all your favorite VOD and digital platforms starting this Tuesday, February 24th. I say see it. Thumbs up. Oh, can't say that. Thumbs. My thumbs aren't doing anything. What do you talk about your own thumbs for now? I'll just say that I recommend it to you as a cinephile, and my thumbs and other digits are doing nothing. Leave me alone. That's all we have for you on this episode of Single Take with me, Daniel Barnes. I will be back next week with more reviews of new movies, including, drumroll please, Scream 7? Necessary. If you're a fan of classic movies, check out the Cannon Fodder podcast. I co-host that with a great Quirky McDonald. We just released our episode where we reviewed Jenna Rollins and Peter Falk in John Cassavetes' A Woman Under the Influence. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? And coming up the first Tuesday in March, we've got Sally Potter's Orlando, starring the great Tilda Swinton. If you would like to support any of these endeavors, please visit daredaniel.com and find Support the Show in the menu. The support of our donors is so essential. I need money for movie tickets. Please, Scream 7, it's not free. As always, your donations, your support, your listens, your thoughts, your prayers, they are hugely appreciated. And until next time, I'm Daniel Barnes saying, save me a seat in the background.